Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Paramahamsa Parabrajakachara Sotera Sada Shri Shimdi Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Kijai Nantakota Vaishnavrinda Kijai Namachara Shuraita Sakur Kijai Prem Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhavuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Ghor Bhaktivedanta Kijai Samaveda Bhaktivedanta Kijai Ghor Kurnanda. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Granga. Mom Bushabaraya Krishna Sabhai Shimati Bhakti Varanta Swamitanam Namasasana Yivishesh Shunya Bhari Pasharizita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Text 37. Naham Nayuyam Yad Ritam Gitim Vidur. Deva kim utapare sara tanmayaya mohita buddhayastvadam vinirmitam chatma samam vichakshmahe maham nayuyam yadritam vitgatim vidur Navamadeva kimutapare sara Tanmayaya mohita bodh buddhayastvadam Vinirmitam chatma samam vichakshmahe Naham nayuyam yadritam gatim vidur Deva kimutapare sara Tanmayaya mohita buddhayastvidam
Tanmayaya mohita buddhayastvidam
Vinirmitam chatma samam vichakshmahe
Vinirmitam chatma samam vichakshmahe Deva
Vidyam Chakma Samam Vichakshmahe.
Vidyam Chakma Samam Vichakshmahe.
Factual.
Gatim.
Movements.
Vidu.
Do know.
Na.
Nor.
Vamadeva.
Lord Shiva. Kim. What. Uta. Else. Apare. Others. Sura. Demigods. Tet.
By his.
Mayaya.
By the illusory energy.
Moita. Bewildered. Buddhaya. With such intelligence. To. But. Idam.
This.
Vinirmitam.
What is created.
Cha.
Also.
Atma samam. By dint of one's personal ability.
Vichakshmahe.
Observe. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Since neither Lord Shiva nor since neither Lord Shiva nor you nor I could ascertain the limits of spiritual happiness, how can other demigods know it? And because all of us are bewildered by the illusory external energy of the Supreme Lord, we can see only this manifested cosmos according to our individual ability. Report. We have many times mentioned the names of the 12 selected authorities, Dvadasha Mahajana, of which Brahma, Narada, and Lord Shiva head the list as the first, second, and third in order of merit of those who know something of the Supreme Lord. Other demigods, semi-demigods, Gandharvas, Charanas, Vajadaras, human beings or asuras cannot possibly know fully about the potencies of the Absolute Lord, Sri Krishna. The demigods, semi-demigods, Gandharvas, etc., are all highly intelligent persons in the upper planets. The human beings are inhabitants of the intermediate planets, and the asuras are inhabitants of the lower planets. All of them have their respected conceptions and estimations of the Absolute Truth, as does the scientist or the empiric philosopher in human society. All such living entities are creatures of the material nature, and consequently they are bewildered by the wonderful display of the three modes of material nature. Such bewilderment is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 7.13. Tribir gunamayer bhavayar abhi sarvamidam jagat. Every entity, beginning from Brahma down to the ant, is individually bewildered by the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone thinks in terms of individual capacity that this universe, which is manifested before us, is all in all. And so the scientists in human society of the 20th century calculates the beginning and end of the universe in his own way. But what can the scientists know? Even Brahma himself was once bewildered, thinking himself the only one Brahma favored by the Lord, but later on, by the grace of the Lord, he came to know that there are innumerable more powerful Brahmas as well, in far bigger universes beyond this universe, and all of these universes combined together form Ekapad Vibhuti, or one-fourth of the manifestation of the Lord's creative energy. The other three-fourths of his energy are displayed in the spiritual world. So what can the tiny scientist with a tiny brain know of the absolute personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna? The Lord says, therefore, Mohitam Navijhanati Mame Vya Paramama Vyam. Bewildered by such modes of material nature, they cannot understand that beyond the manifestation is a supreme person who is the absolute controller of everything. Brahma, Narada, and Lord Shiva know about the Lord to a considerable extent, and therefore one should follow the instructions of these great personalities instead of being satisfied with a tiny brain and its playful discoveries, such as spacecraft and similar products of science. It's playful discoveries, that's all they are. As the mother is the only authority to identify the father of the child, so the mother Vedas, presented by the recognized authority, such as Brahma, Narada, or Shiva, is the only authority to inform us about the absolute truth. Om Gyanat Marandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Mitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchiko Patrubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Prabhupada. So another nice verse and purport here by Srila Prabhupada. So the main points I want to discuss today is how no one can know Krishna in full, and the reason for that is because our knowledge is covered by the modes of nature. The absolute truth is known when the heart is purified through Krishna's mercy, and with a purified heart, Krishna reveals himself and all knowledge to the jiva. So that's the class. First of all, Brahma states that neither he, Lord Shiva, or Narada can fully know Krishna. Now that's obviously true. It's an absolute statement from the Bhagavatam, and that's explained the limitations on knowledge. But Lord Brahma is obviously speaking for some humility as well, because as Prabhupada points out at the end, these are the authorities, these are the greatest of the Mahajans, and if they don't know everything, we're not going to do too much better finding others who will, because these are some of the greatest personalities in this universe. Obviously, Lord Brahma is the first living being, he's the creator, he's the head of our sampradaya, and also he's our param, whatever, guru. And of course, Krishna revealed himself when he sat and meditated on the lotus flower. And we can see from the Brahma Samhita that he wrote that the entire spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, was revealed to him in his heart. So these are very great personalities. They shouldn't be dismissed easily when Brahma very humbly says, well, what do I know? I don't know anything. And also, of course, Lord Shiva, he's considered the greatest Vaishnava. He's in charge of the modes of ignorance and destruction. And it's described he's almost on the level of Krishna. And Prabhupada gives an example of the milk and yogurt. They're similar but different. Lord Shiva, he's in his own kind of tattva. And he's transformed, just like milk is transformed to yogurt, but yogurt can't come back to milk. So he's not exactly on the same level as Krishna. And also it's because he is in the mode, he is not in the mode of ignorance, but he's in control and in charge of the mode of ignorance. Therefore, that connection or contamination with the modes of nature separates him somewhat from Krishna, who we are hearing in all of these verses in this chapter practically, how Krishna is completely above and aloof from the modes of nature. Although he controls it, he creates it, he makes everything happen, still, he remains aloof and is never contaminated from his pure spiritual essence. And of course, Narada Muni, what can we say? He's throughout the Bhagavatam, practically every chapter, it seems like. And he is actually imbued with the power for bhakti. He may be somewhere else, but I know definitely Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha explains that Narada is a Shaktivesh avatar. And that means that he is a empowered living entity, and he is empowered to be able to teach and spread bhakti yoga. So he's practically the greatest teacher, the greatest exponent. And we can think of so many people he made devotees, even just in the Bhagavatam, and so many different disciples, Macari the hunter, and the list goes on and on. So even these people, as great as they are, and all of the Mahajans, the spiritual authorities, are described that they know, and Prabhupada says, they know the Lord to a considerable extent, but they don't know fully. But we should follow the instructions of these great personalities. because of the great knowledge that they do have. Now, why can't they know everything? Why do they not have complete and total knowledge? It's said here, even Krishna cannot know himself in fullness, which is very interesting. That's a kind of interesting philosophical point. And it was actually in yesterday's class and the purport that was described that even he cannot know himself in fullness. And it was described of how he's always expanding his energies, then he has to expand his knowledge to encompass all of them, but then he immediately expands again because he's unlimited. And, you know, we can't really mentally compute these things. It's kind of like, have you ever really tried to think with your mind about infinity or everything going on? You know, it's like there's a certain point where it's almost like your brain can't work anymore, you know, because these are concepts that are beyond our material understanding, and that's what these verses are saying to us. These are things we cannot, because even Krishna can't even fully understand himself, because he's expanding it every second. But then, of course, he does. So it's like one of those simultaneous, he does and he doesn't understand everything about himself. And of course, Ananta Sesha, with thousands of miles speaking for eternity, glorifying Krishna, talking about his pastimes. Prabhupada said once that he eternally discusses his pastimes and his glories and never comes to an end and never repeats them. You know, so Krishna is so unlimited that who could possibly describe everything about Krishna? Because so even the greatest devotees do not feel they really know Krishna. There's a verse, this is actually from yesterday's verse in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's purport on that. He says, and this is one of those that I don't know the source, he says, the Shruti says. So anyway, it's obviously a scriptural verse, but he doesn't really say where it's from. Some of you may know it. I don't know where it comes from. Anyway, it's Yosa Jaksha Parame Vyoman Songa Veda Yadi Va Naveda, which means if a person says he knows that Supreme Lord in the spiritual sky, he does not know him. So there again, it's confirming this idea that very, very difficult to actually know Krishna completely. Impossible, in fact. There's a nice verse also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 87, Prayers of the Personified Vedas, verse 41. It says, because the Personified Vedas, the Upanishads, say, because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can ever reach to the end of your glories. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. So whole universes are just like particles of dust within Krishna. I mean, so his greatness is just almost, it is unimaginable. It literally is unimaginable to us. With the limited, even if we had, full abilities, you know, being completely purified, we still couldn't understand everything about Krishna. So, here we are, this material world, very covered over by material energy, prakriti, modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. We have a material mind, body, and senses, material intelligence, ego. The question is, how can the jiva in the material world know Krishna with this material body, mind, and senses? Now, this is a very interesting question that was raised by Parikshit Maharaj, and that's Bhagavatam 10.87, the prayers by personified Vedas. That's how these came to be spoken. Because Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Swami, the first verse, he says, O Brahman, how can the Vedas directly describe the Supreme Absolute Truth, who cannot be described in words? The Vedas are limited to describing the qualities of material nature, but the Supreme is devoid of these qualities, being transcendental to all material manifestations and their causes. Now, this is really, when you think about it, this is an excellent question. I mean, they're all great questions. I mean, Srimad Bhagavatam is based upon great questions and answers by Maharaj Parikshit Shukadeva Goswami, and so many of our other scriptures are too. But I think this one is really a profound philosophical question, because if Krishna is beyond all material qualities, which we've been establishing here throughout these verses in this chapter and obviously before in the Bhagavatam, you know, how can the living entity with his or her material senses, mind, intelligence, and this material, how can we understand it? So that was the question. And we cannot understand Krishna because of the covering potency of the material nature. Srila Prabhupada, in the purport today, he quotes from the Bhagavad Gita 7.13, Tribir gunamayar haivar ebi saram idam jagat mohitam nabijana te mam ebya paramam avyayam. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, whom above the modes and inexhaustible. So basically, the Bhagavad Gita is saying the same thing. Krishna's above the modes, we're deluded by the modes. And so nobody can know him. So, how do we answer this? Well, that's the wondrous process of Bhakti Yoga that explains exactly how we're able to do this. These modes, first, this is Lord Brahma again in chapter 9, which should be coming up a little bit in the second canto, where the Chatur Shlokis are, and you know, Lord Krishna reveals himself and speaks the essential ingredients that expands and becomes the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, "Oh, master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them, the energies. You play like a spider that covers itself in its own energy, and your determination is infallible." Now, Prabhupada has a really nice purport that sort of explains how this works with Krishna, the covering potency. He says, "By a combination of such potencies of lore, there's a manifestation of creation, maintenance, and annihilation in due course of time, and by different agents like Brahma, etc. But all such agents and creative energies are emanations from the Lord, and as such, there's nothing except the Lord, or one supreme source of different diversities. The exact example is the spider and the spider's web. The web is created by..." I always thought it was kind of strange comparing an analogy comparing Krishna to a spider, but it actually is very good. "The web is created by the spider, it's maintained by the spider, and as soon as the spider likes, the whole thing is wound up within the spider. The spider is covered within the web. If an insignificant spider is so powerful as to act according to its will, why can't the supreme being act by his supreme will in the creation, maintenance, and destruction of cosmic manifestation?" So it is a good analogy, because the spider creates, maintains, and draws back his web. Everything is actually within the body of the spider. I don't know how they do it, but somehow out of them comes this web. A little disgusting, but you know.
Saliva.
Oh, it's saliva? Okay. It's saliva, now we know. Anyway, it comes out, and then it comes back in. And obviously, many little insects and stuff are entangled in that web that he creates. But if I'm sure you've all seen this, but you see a spider on the web, they just can go, right? They just move all over, completely at will. So the spider creates this, binds all these other insects up, but he's never bound. He's never been caught by this web, totally aloof from it. So it's really a nice analogy, that, although it's kind of a, you know, not the most pleasant analogy. So anyway, the nature of Krishna's pastimes is covered by our eyes. Our vision tends to be covered by the modes of nature, which is Krishna's own potency. And that's one of the points that's made us particularly in this chapter. Another example that Prabhupada gives is the clouds and the sun. Prabhupada mentions this in several places, actually. Because, I mean, the clouds are created by the energy of the sun, right? Because the sun evaporates water, the water vapor comes up, becomes clouds. And then the clouds covers our vision of the sun. We can't see the sun because of the clouds. But the sun is up there above the clouds, not covered, right? The sun is completely aloof from it. The sun's energy, the rays created the cloud, but the sun remains aloof. And the sun can burn away those clouds. You ever say, like, on a foggy, we have these foggy mornings, right, a lot around here. But once the sun rises and a couple hours go by, the sun burns away the fog, and then you can see the sun. And so it's like that. The sun can burn away the clouds and reveal itself. So, but that's at the will of the sun, not at our will. I can't make the fog go away, but the sun can, right? So we need to hear from authority, We need to hear from the Mahajans from and the representatives. Obviously, Lord Brahma, head of our Sampradaya. We have a long line of just absolutely illustrious Acharyas, six Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, coming in this line of the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya Sampradaya, and then down, of course, our Srila Prabhupada. So we hear spiritual knowledge, we're given spiritual knowledge, but I was thinking about this, that even if we, if a person hears knowledge, and they might even accept it, and they might say, okay, I know what's going on, because I read it here in this book, in the Bhagavad Gita, and it says this, and okay, I'll accept that, I'll believe it. But does a person truly understand and realize that knowledge? Just through the process of, you know, hearing it. Not completely, usually, right? I mean, hearing is obviously a process of devotional service, but often that knowledge can be only theoretical, right? I mean, sometimes we've seen people who are like scholars and like that who actually are very attracted to our movement. I remember in the beginning when Srila Prabhupada, you know, there were quite a few scholars. Some of them even wrote introductions or, you know, they wrote reviews of Prabhupada's books and they were very favorable. But, you know, it was like Prabhupada say, you know, on the outside licking the glass of honey. You know, it's like you're attracted to it, but you don't have a taste. You know, in other words, they're not tasting it because they're not surrendering and actually doing the process of devotional service. So just that theoretical knowledge, and these are great scholars, they might have known more verses than any of us, you know, but it doesn't really bring them to understand Krishna. So I was thinking, if a devotee didn't have this taste and didn't open the jar, the honey jar, you know, and taste the honey, would we stay? How many people in this room would be here if they didn't have some taste of Krishna consciousness? Of course you do. We all do, right? I mean, that's what, you know, and that's the thing. Krishna consciousness is not only theoretical, but it's very practical because it becomes realized. It becomes accepted and understood, not through the material senses, not through the material mind, not through the intelligence, although some intelligence is needed. Prabhupada says, you have to have a little intelligence to understand it. You have to at least be a human being with a certain level of intelligence. But it's really understood through the heart, isn't it? And bhakti is meant to be realized in the heart through experiencing bhakti, through experiencing Krishna consciousness. I was just thinking that in the beginning, what was the kind of one of almost our slogans that Prabhupada say, chant and be happy, right? Didn't we have a little booklet called Chant and Be Happy still? Yeah, so chant, what does that mean when you think about it? It means you do this practice, and it doesn't say chant and be knowledgeable. It says, right, it says chant and be happy. In other words, there's a change in the heart. There's a transformation. There's some realization. There's some actual experience of spiritual life. Because you're experiencing the holy name, which is identical to Krishna. So through chanting, you are making contact with Krishna, experiencing Krishna. Krishna is purifying the heart and revealing a little bit of himself. Now, it may just be a little taste, but is there enough? You know, is there enough to keep us going? And we continually, Krishna is so kind to his devotees that he does give us those tastes. And he gives us a little bit of that result of bhakti. We know from the nectar devotion that of the six results of bhakti, the first two, which are achieved just in the beginning level of vaidhi sadhana, is klesha, relief from suffering, and what's the word auspiciousness? There you go, thank you. So those two, and that's right in the beginning. The full six go through the stages of bhakti and prema. But so right there, relief from suffering, which is a huge thing, because everyone's suffering in the material world, and awards auspiciousness. Now, I've seen some explanations and definitions that really means, like, happiness. In other words, auspiciousness. Things are going well for you. Your life is changing, right? Auspicious means, you know, what's the definition of auspicious? It means favorable, right? It means good, you know?
Good fortune,
right. So we're having good fortune, we're diminishing our pain, diminishing the sufferings in this world, our karma is being relieved. That's a huge thing. So when one takes up devotional service, even in the beginning, one is experiencing that. And then, of course, we go through more and more stages of devotional service, making advancement. And the thing about a lot of what's being talked about here is knowledge. You know, how do we know? It's epistemology and philosophy. Is how do we know? How do we know what is true? Basically, it's the whole field of philosophy, and there's some incredible speculations about it. If you ever get into this, I was a philosophy major one semester, and that was enough. I mean, I wasn't a devotee then, but even then I knew they did not really know the truth. It was all over the place, you know. They'd have these seminars. I'm going a little off script here, but they'd have these seminars and things, and they get these colloquia where someone would present their philosophical paper. And I remember one of them was, this paper was about, if there was a hand floating in space, how would you be able to know whether it was a left hand or a right hand? That was so intriguing that I think I changed majors at that point. Okay. Anyway, in other words, I forget what I was reading. Sometimes Prabhupada and even our other acharyas are extremely critical of this type of waste of the human form of life. You know, this type of using big brains. These are intelligent people. You know, these aren't foolish people. Well, they are foolish, you know, because they're misusing their intelligence, right? So anyway, but there are different stages of achieving transcendental knowledge. And I ran across this, and honestly, I didn't really know these. I just read this today. This is from Srila Prabhupada, a lecture on 799, Bhagavatam. Perhaps there are different stages of understanding, prajaksha, paroksha, aparaksha, adhokshaja, and aprakriti. Everybody know those? I don't really know. Yeah, I'm sure you knew them. I didn't know them. Okay. Anyway, Prabhupada says, the ordinary understanding is direct perception, called prajaksha. Now, that one's we're familiar with. Talk about, you know, the ascending and descending, you know, the material scientific method is prajaksha. Now, higher than prajaksha's understanding is paroksha, meaning to gather knowledge from higher authority. So if I'm hearing from these great authorities and hearing the Bhagavatam, that's paroksha. But that's only the second stage. Above that is aparoksha, which means realization. And I'm just going to intersperse here. This is a purport from 11.5.12 that also talked about this. It says, limited sensory knowledge, prajaksha jnana, is useless without theoretical spiritual knowledge, which is paroksha jnana, which gradually matures with careful cultivation into direct, realized knowledge of the self, aparoksha jnana. Okay? So this is, you know, we call it direct realization. Sometimes, you know, we also have the terms of jnana and vijnana. Vijnana, I mean, there's several definitions. These are like words that have 15 definitions. But often probably talk about being jnana, being knowledge, and vijnana, realized knowledge. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this paroksha jnana, realized knowledge. And going on, Prabhupada says, above that is adhokshaja. Adhokshaja means beyond the understanding of these material senses. And above that, there is aprakriti, aprakrita, completely transcendental. So bhakti is on the transcendental platform beyond adhokshaja. Now, I'm not quite sure of those differences between those two. Those get pretty fine. But at any rate, the point is that we need to deepen and deepen our transcendental realizations and understandings of Krishna consciousness, and certainly go beyond just the theoretical jnana aspect. So the Krishna consciousness practitioner gains realized knowledge and knowledge of transcendence. And that goes, and it happens by the process of cleansing the heart. And that leads to transcendental vision. Because this is really where we're getting around to the answer of how with these material, gross and subtle body, these senses mind, can we understand transcendence? And that is because those senses and mind become spiritualized. They become actually part of the spiritual energy. Because when we talk about matter and spirit, now there is prakriti and there is spirit, there's, you know, they are different things, but at the same time, Sometimes the definition has to do with the utilization, understanding, right? How, when, in other words, isn't proper to give example. I mean, is an object material or spiritual? If you use it in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritual, the yukta vairagya. And we're all familiar with that. Prabhupada, you know, talked a lot about that right from the beginning, right? He would say, you know, I'm using a stick-to-phone, but because I am, you know, translating books, the stick-to-phone is not a material object. It's now spiritual. It's spiritualized. And he gave the example, of course, that, you know, you take the steel rod, you put it in the fire, you take it out, and it acts like fire. It's still a steel rod, but it gives off heat, light, right? All the aspects of fire. So it's become like fire. So in the same way, even in these material bodies, the material body of a devotee becomes spiritualized and therefore is acting in a spiritual manner. And of course, that's to the degree that we're advanced and surrendered in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said in a purport to teaches the Lord Kapila, if we are devotees, lovers of God, the ointment of love will clear our eyes. In order to see God, we have to cleanse our eyes by wiping away the cataracts of material contamination. Although we may be eager to see God, we cannot see him with these material eyes. So it's like cleaning the dust on the heart or the cataracts in the eyes. We have to become cleansed and purified to be able to see or experience God. In the going back to the prayers by the personified Vedas, I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I was reading the prayers by the personified Vedas. As you can see, I'm still reading them. Take a long time to get through. It's not an easy read. Okay. The devotees who worship you as the shelter of all beings disregard death and place their feet on his head. But with the words of the Vedas, you bind the non-devotees like animals, though they be vastly learned scholars. It is your affectionate devotees who can purify themselves and others, not those who are inimical to you. So the Vedas are saying, the personified Vedas, that even the Vedas bind the non-devotees of the material world. That's interesting. They're the personified Vedas. They represent Upanishads and the Vedic literature. And they're saying, even our, what we represent, what we speak and we teach, will be binding to the non-devotee and really keep them attached to the material world. And of course, that's talking a lot about the Karmakanda sections and, you know, Jnanakanda, and those parts of the Vedas, which are very extensive, you know, that really are not fully Krishna conscious, which are not in, really speaking the highest absolute truth, the highest understanding, but are at these, you know, the lower levels where people can gradually elevate themselves. You know, but these are quite different than the Vaishnava literatures, you know, which do not bind, but unbind, but elevate and free and purify the jiva in this material world. So, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, in the 11th chapter, which I always thought was interesting, that these verses are at the end of the 11th chapter, which is about the universal form, but then they describe so clearly devotional service at the end. And I guess that's to sort of make the distinction. You know, in other words, we're not interested in worshiping the universal form. Arjuna wasn't really. He said, I don't want to see it anymore. I want to see your two-hand human form again. That's the form that I love, that I worship, you know, as my friend. You know, I mean, okay, that was a wonderful display, and it kind of like really, you know, almost startled Arjuna. It was almost frightening. You know, and Arjuna was not a person easily frightened, as we know, being one of the greatest warriors on earth. So at any rate, he says, I don't want to see that anymore. I want to see your two-handed form again. So then at the end, in the Prabhupada says in the purport of 1152, Krishna is covered by his yoga maya potency. He is not to be seen or revealed to anyone and everyone. Only by one to whom he reveals himself can he be seen. This is confirmed in Vedic literature. For one who is a surrendered soul, the absolute truth can actually be understood. The transcendentalist, by continuous Krishna consciousness and by devotional service to Krishna, can have his spiritual eyes open and can see Krishna by revelation. And of course, 1154, the last verse is, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you. That's a two-arm form. And can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So, it's very, very clear, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, that, you know, Krishna is telling us, if you want to see me, if you want to be transcendentally knowledgeable, if you want to get out of this material world, you want to become free from all of these things, there's really one path, and that's bhakti yoga. It's devotional service, undivided devotional service unto me. And how is that done? First of all, by the mercy of Krishna's devotees, by surrendering to them. In the purport to 1154, Prabhupada quotes Svetashvatara Upanishad, Yasha Devi Para Bhaktir, Yita Devi Tata Gurau, Tashyaiti Kahita Hyarta Prakasante Mahatmana. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all imports of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So, through the mercy of Krishna, in almost a mysterious and miraculous way, Krishna reveals himself. It's interesting because one of the Chaitanya slokas, there's two different purports, one in Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Lord Chaitanya quotes it, or Kaviraj Das Goswami. I'll do this. This is from 152, but it's really the same verse as 2.9. It says, by my causeless mercy, be enlightened in truth about my personality, manifestations, qualities, and pastimes. The transcendental forms of the Lord are a mystery, and the symptoms of these forms, which are absolutely different from anything made of mundane elements, are also mysterious. The truth of these mysteries was revealed to Brahma by the descending process, without the help of an ascending one. The Lord's mercy descends to a devotee like Brahmaji, and through Brahma, to Narada, to Vyas, Shukadeva, and so on in the bona fide chain of disciplic succession. We cannot understand the mysteries of the Lord by our mundane efforts. They are only revealed by His grace to the proper devotees. These mysteries are gradually disclosed to the various grades of devotees in proportion to the gradual development of their service attitude. So, in proportion to our service, Krishna reveals Himself. And of course, that's something that we hear many places in the scripture, that however one surrenders on Him, Krishna rewards proportionally in that way. But it's never an automatic process. It's not that, okay, I've done A, B, and C, and therefore I get this much, Krishna reveals this much, and if I do this service here, then I'm going to get... No, it's not like that. Krishna's independent. He can do whatever He wants. So we will receive the realization, a revelation of the Lord through His mercy. Now we have to qualify ourselves, and we qualify ourselves through our surrender, through our service. And then as He chooses, Krishna can give His mercy to the devotee. Srila Prabhupada says in purport to that verse, the Lord is unlimited. No one can know Him completely, but one's advancement in transcendental loving service to the Lord can make one eligible to know the Lord. Here we see the Lord is sufficiently pleased with Brahmaji, this is later, and therefore He offers His causeless mercy to him, so Brahmaji may have the factual realization of the Lord by His mercy only. In several places, or at least in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu and some of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's work sort of after that, or commenting on it, it's described that there's two sources of mercy for the devotee. One is Krishna. And we just heard the example of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was the only one in the universe, so there was no one else to give Him mercy. Lord Krishna reveals Himself in His heart. But more often, it's Krishna's devotees. Because after Lord Brahma, then we had the cyclic succession of all the created beings that came into the universe, Narada, etc., Narada being His son, and going on from there. So through Krishna's devotees, primarily, and Krishna also, within the heart, one is able to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, it is that purifying process that's going to help qualify us to understand Krishna. I'll end with, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport to 1087-50, this is sort of the conclusion of the prayers by the personified Vedas. You remember the original question. How can the material mind understand God who is beyond the material conception and without material qualities? And here's a short and sweet answer. Vishnu says, the answer is, the mind can perceive God by the power of devotion, bhakti, arising from the mercy of the Supreme Lord. That was kind of a nice, simple conclusion. Should have just said that in the beginning and it all gone. Anyway, that's the process. And of course, Srila Prabhupada is so wonderfully, through all of his purports and giving us these literatures, led us to this point where we can understand this incredibly rare and wonderful process of bhakti yoga and actually be able to have that direct experience they're talking about of Krishna's mercy in our lives. So, questions, comments? Oh, we have a... Which one is it? Is Adi... Oh, is he here? Yeah. We have an announcement that it's Adi Day's birthday today. Should we give him a Hare Krishna round for his good health and long life? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Don't leave today. Because after the class, I'm going to get out of the Maharsha.
Okay, good. Hare Baba. Anything else? Gangan Narayan.
I have this question over
here. Oh, okay, absolutely. Go ahead.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for such an inspiring class. I always remember someplace I heard during my years that the soul is spiritual individually, we're spiritual energy, and the Mahamantra is spiritual. So if we connect those two and we chant, you know, we connect those two spiritual energy with faith, we will make tremendous advancement. Sure. And I've been trying to practice that for all these years, so something is missing in my life. Maybe my faith is not strong or something. But the question you were saying that it's all material, you know, material energy, material modes of nature. But because of those two spiritual things, we're spiritual, but we're covered over by material covering. Yeah. But the Mahamantra is spiritual. It's a spiritual vibration. So if we have profound faith in this chanting, and we, you know, in the faith, and we chant and we try to hear it, we will make such tremendous advancement.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's
yeah,
very nice.
I was trying to practice it, but anyhow, I still need the mercy of...
Well, we're all practicing. That's what sadhana is, the practice stage. But, you know, you keep practicing long enough, and they say practice makes perfect. So our lives will become perfect, you know, through this practice. And that's an important point, because within all these modes of nature and everything, there is the jivatma, the spirit soul, who's, of course, tatashta shakti, who's spiritual energy. And actually, in the prayers by personified Vedas, that's the first point they make. They say, actually, the living entity is spiritual. And therefore, it is a matter of reconnecting with the spiritual energy again, as you were saying. And, you know, we have this wonderful process of hearing, chanting, remembering, and all the processes to be able to make that connection. Well, thank you. Who was next?
Over here.
Oh, I guess we're on the side. Come back. We'll come back to it. Go ahead. Well, as long as you're there with the microphone, go ahead.
how many qualities of a person to be qualified good devotee?
How many qualities does a person need to be qualified? What is
to
it?
To be considered a good devotee.
To be a good devotee.
How many qualities?
How many qualities? Well, probably not too many. I mean, if you could simplify it and just say if... one loves Krishna, one is surrendered, one serves one's spiritual master, any of those things makes one a good devotee. Yeah. So it's not real difficult. I mean, at least in theory it's not. Sometimes in practice, you know, it's hard to really always do that, you know, but the process of being a good devotee is quite simple, actually. Prabhupada made it very simple for us. Yeah. Okay.
I just say something about what she just said. There are 26 qualities for a pure devotee. That's for a pure devotee.
Yeah.
You can look that up somewhere. I don't know exactly. What I wanted to say was that towards the end of the purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that he connected different levels of spiritual happiness with knowledge of Krishna.
Yeah.
Like that. And it's very encouraging because you don't have to become absolutely pure to experience spiritual happiness. That's very encouraging. For example, the four Kumaras were examples of before they completely surrendered, they're examples of neophytes searching after knowledge of the absolute truth. Neophytes, the four Kumaras. Mm-hmm. So that anybody who comes to Krishna consciousness, they can begin experiencing spiritual happiness without having a high degree of knowledge. Right. That's the amazing thing about Krishna consciousness. And we've experienced that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're a better example than the Kumaras, because Kumaras were actually quite expert at jnana, and they were actually at the liberated stage, you know, Brahman realization, I think. You know, and then how could they get to the spiritual world otherwise? And then, of course, they became devotees by association there, smelling the incense, etc. You know, yeah.
There's one last thing I wanted to say also is that in the Nectar of Devotion, it describes that even Bob Bhaktas are considered to be not completely liberated.
Yeah, which kind of Bhaktas?
Bob Bhaktas. Because there's still some residue of karma within the heart. It could be like microscopic. But they're Bob Bhaktas. So what, you don't have to be completely liberated, to experience, spiritual happiness.
No. There's so many angles to that. another angle to it is, hey, and I know someone over there who has another angle, but let me say something first before we... Prabhupada also said things like, all my devotees are pure devotees. Now, I'm not a pure devotee. According to the standard definition, most of us probably would say I'm not a pure devotee because we may still have some contamination or residue of things within the heart. Or, we're not able to be 100% surrendered at all times, at every moment, every second in our life. But he meant all of us are following the process of pure devotional service, right? Notice, there's no karma, there's no jnana, there's no yoga, right? None of these contaminations, fortunately, as most of those of us who are Westerners, we're almost fortunate that we knew nothing. We didn't know what a demigod was. We didn't know, right? So we were able to just kind of accept this process, not knowing much else. But so in that sense, yes, and you could also say that once a devotee begins the process of devotional service and turns to the spiritual master, he is liberated in a sense. But on the other hand, no, we're not completely liberated, but we still are experiencing spiritual happiness. Is to the degree that we are surrendering, the degree that we're actively engaged in hearing, chanting, remembering about Krishna. And that's obviously one of the wonderful things about Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada gave us. The ability to, right from the beginning, experience that. And I think, many people did. I mean, you hear so many devotee stories, but when I came to Krishna consciousness, and there was usually some real experience, of happiness and joy and realization was there. Now sometimes, and that's another complicated subject, about what that is exactly, when you talk about, but sometimes it's fleeting, it doesn't always stay, it's not necessarily permanent, but it's there. And that's the mercy of the spiritual master, mercy of Krishna. It gives us that.
Surrender is not a one-time process, it's a continuous process.
I thought I already did it, no? You're absolutely right about that. It's day to day, moment to moment, isn't it? And there's always a new test, I think.
Yes, so you read the verse where Krishna says, surrender unto me. And I thought, well, I did that yesterday.
I always feel like when I read the Bhagavatam and stuff, when someone, somebody, just surrenders, that's it, like they're done. I think that was in former ages, in other yugas, people had that kind of, they had a kind of personality, so they just, they surrender, now they're pure devotees, and they just, never, where for us it's, I think, more of a struggle. Yeah.
So, So I don't know much about being a good devotee, but I know a lot about being a good-for-nothing devotee. And I've been pretty hanging in there with that one. So
good for
good-for-nothing devotee. So, but I think it's sincerity, man. You know, if you have sincerity to want to do it, everything else kind of lines up. You know, you gotta have that. And but as Gungan Ryan says, people have articulated it, you know, talk about engaging jhana and bhakti there. You know, there's qualities that are described. But hey, what one thing on the, you know, connecting with the Hare Krishna, it's not that we are connecting our spiritual nature, because we are spiritual nature. So if we're thinking we have a spiritual nature, maybe, you know, it could reconsider that, because we are spiritual nature. So if we're thinking we're not spiritual nature, connecting our spiritual nature, you know, we are spiritual nature, and we're getting in tune to who we are by connecting with the
heart. But isn't that exactly what my illusion is, thinking that we're not spiritual nature?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, to say, well, we, you know, yeah, it seems like, you know.
Well, it's kind of like
if we're thinking we're not spiritual nature, trying to Hare Krishna, that might be slowing
like
us up a little bit.
Like you can't say my spirit soul, because who's the my who's speaking or seeing? Who's the observer? No, the observer is the soul. That's who we are.
Yeah.
Right, removing the coverings so that our spiritual nature unfolds and comes to. Yeah, go ahead.
In answer to her question, I was just thinking of the verse that you quoted, that one who has complete faith in spiritual master and in the Vedas, that all the purports are revealed. So even that one quality of that complete faith. And the other thing I was thinking of is that somebody asked Prabhupada once, how many pure devotees do you have in your movement? And then Prabhupada turned and asked someone, how many devotees are in your movement? We might have said, well, 5,000, because we have 5,000 pure devotees in our movement, which kind of confirms that you were saying we're following the process. And to Prabhupada, as long as you're in there following the process, that made you a pure devotee. Right?
Exactly. We just haven't quite realized it yet. Okay.
Prabhu, can you name a semi-demigod?
That was a good one, wasn't it? I think they're talking about like the Gandharvas and Vijayaharas, and isn't it?
But that.
Yeah, those other ones. You know, like the ones that are the celestial singers and.
But he names those specific ones after he says demigods and semi-demigods and.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Vijayaharas, Gandharvas.
I just. 12 Asikas, 11 Rudras, and then 8 Vasus and Vasini Mother. That's it. It's 33 are the real chief. And then they have a great seven. I'm assuming that he's talking about those are members who are residents of the heavenly planets, you know, in that kind of Svargaloka realm like that, but they may not be these chief demigods, you know, but they certainly have. You know, more material qualities, at least, than we do as human beings. They're, you know, humans aren't all that high up on the, you know, on the ladder. Yes, sorry.
All right, Krishna Prabhu, thank you. I was thinking on this topic of what is a devotee. I was listening to a class recently in the auto bar, asked Prabhupada on a morning walk about devotees and how they suffer. And Prabhupada said something like, to be a devotee is no easy thing. Or to be a devotee is no easy thing. It's not to be taken lightly. But what I wanted to say, I've been thinking a lot about surrender, what it means, what does it look like. And two things occurred to me. For one, I have to take my foot off the brake. And then the other, I imagined or I heard Krishna say, do you trust me? Just like that. Krishna, do you trust me? And then I have to take my foot off the brake, you know. It's hard to go forward when you're one foot on the accelerator and one foot on the brake.
Yeah. That's a good analogy.
Well, Krishna arranged for that to be the previous comment, because I was meditating on these cars that we drive around and how they are an extension of our energy to move around the vehicle. But when the car is just sitting there without a driver, or when it has no fuel, or the electric cars, when the charge is not there, then it's just an immobile piece of matter. But we being Tatastha Shakti, we're marginal, but when we're in primary contact with the energetic, you know, the Supreme Lord, the source energy, then we're attracted to him like a magnet, pulled towards him, upward and onward, you know, back home to his lotus feet. So in that way, we're connected through the Sambandha Gyan, and then this Abhideya, this practice, and then ultimately toward the Prayojana. So this perfection of direction is what animates our embodied state, you know, towards that spiritual destination. But we have to stay connected, like these old trolley cars that would be running through town and wherever it was. Yeah, with the wires above, right? So as long as they're connected, then they can go. But as soon as they're disconnected, then they stop. So in this way, you know, it's on and off, anishta, unsteady. But as soon as we become steady through the anartha nirvritti process, removing the obstacles to connection and direction.
But what, I guess the important question then would be, what keeps us connected?
Right, so that's, well, it's well, sadhana is our hand reaching up, you know, isn't it?
Sadhana as internal and external.
External, okay.
Internal means the clear-cut philosophy in the heart. Means hearing and also speaking, saddhaya. Then something, practical reality, service, every day, some service. And chanting holy name, and having good association, five things together, that's internal. And then external, that you do preaching, book distribution, all this, whatever we do. Then inner connection, that will produce conviction and determination. And that's it. Awaken for love of God, it will be awakened automatically.
But then karuna shakti comes.
Karuna shakti only causes, karuna shakti we cannot force. It descends when we do sadhana. They see, it cannot be forced. But it will automatically comes when they see our sincerity.
Yeah, that's
without sadhana, not possible.
But before sadhana also means
following the instruction of Guru. Sadhana also means hearing about, and sadhana also having a good devotee association where service attitude is developing. The whole thing is creating an inspiration where the attraction for the Lord will be there. That is karuna shakti. Attraction comes automatically when the inspiration is repeated by the sadhana. It's very practical the way Prabhupada said.
Okay, are we finished? It's getting late. One more? Okay.
Just attached to what Prabhu was saying, how is it causeless mercy if it seems conditional upon our service attitude, you know, our endeavor?
Well, there is causeless mercy. And that usually comes from association with a devotee, you know, with a great devotee. And, you know, it's called a gyata sukriti. In other words, causeless, that's like without any knowledge, without any cause. You know, you may have just had an association. We may have had an association with some great devotee or heard the holy name or whatever it might be. And that, you know, became a thing that propelled us. In fact, without that, you can't really begin the process of Shraddha. Because then the question comes, okay, if Shraddha is in the beginning of faith, where does it come from? And then at least Vishwanath says it comes from a gyata sukriti. In other words, the mercy of devotees. Somehow we had some contact. And then that, now, you also have to accept it. Prabhupada gave the example. He says, you know, the mercy of the spiritual master is there for everyone, and some people take it up. Just like the rain comes, it'll be on dry land, it might be on the ocean, it doesn't do any good, but it also falls on some fertile ground and water some seeds, right? So the mercy is there really, but it also requires us accepting that mercy, right? I mean, how many people have heard the holy name or taken prasadam or seen, you know what I mean? And not everyone becomes devotees. All that. Okay. Well, your process has begun. Yeah, I mean, you know, any contact with devotional service, you know, begins, the change has begun for the jiva.
Can you say that also in 4:10, Bhagavad Gita 4:10, the Bhagavad Prabhupada died, that the sequence of bhakti, he put that sloka, adho shraddha tata shraddha sangha. But the shraddha, he puts in English, says a preliminary desire. So it is not the association itself alone. It is my desire that I want to serve. I want to actually take advantage of serving and hear from them and apply in my life. Right. So that desire has to be there.
That's what, like the description of, you know, the two birds in the tree, the jiva and the paramatma. When the jiva finally says, I've had enough, dear life, I want something else, so please, you know, God help me. Then Krishna gives.
Correct.
Okay, I think we should end class. I'll go to